Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of October 22nd, 2019. Have you noticed Senator Elizabeth Warren creeping up in the polls and also coming under fire from her opponents? Well, this week we look at Senator Elizabeth Warren's campaign approach to South Carolina with the state newspaper's Mayon Schechter, who recently co-authored a piece looking into Warren's popularity in the state, which remains a stronghold for former Vice President Joe Biden. But is she doing enough to chip away at Biden's lead? You can interact with us on Twitter or Instagram at SCLeadPod, where we always want to hear from you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. Also, make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts exist, including NPR One. You can listen to all four sections of our podcast instead of wondering who Pierre Delecto is and if he knows Carlos Danger and Reinhold Niebuhr. Just kidding, it's Mitt Romney, and he definitely knows of Anthony Weiner and James Comey. Burner counts. Or worrying about getting CBD oil-laced nerds rope this Halloween. Who's lacing this nerds rope, and who is wasting their CBD oil, the apparent cure-all for everything? LeadPod does not have a CBD oil yet, but we're working on it. Now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the state newspaper reports that South Carolina U.S. Attorney Sherry Lydon sailed easily through a brief Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on her way to becoming the state's newest federal judge. Lydon has been the state's chief federal prosecutor since May 2018. Now, a full Judiciary Committee vote to send her confirmation to the Senate floor is not expected for several weeks. Federal judgeships are lifetime appointments. Number two, the Greenville News reports that Circuit Court Judge Stephen John in Horry County has ruled the state's civil asset forfeiture law unconstitutional. The decision could set the table for a state appellate court to determine whether the state needs to enact reforms to current law. An attempt to reform the controversial practice stalled in the Statehouse last year following the Greenville News' investigation series called Taken. Our dedicated leaders will know that we did an episode on this back in February. Number three, snake alert. Snake alert. Snake alert. I repeat, snake alert. Not a test, not a joke. The Post and Courier reports that more than 265 people have been bitten by venomous snakes in South Carolina this year, a record number reported to the Palmetto Poison Center at the University of South Carolina. No one has died, according to the reports. A peak in bites occurred at the end of September when at least 24 people in the state were bitten by venomous snakes in a single week. Most of the bites came from copperheads that allegedly came out from hiding to find water during the drought. So watch out for those copperheads, y'all. And number four, the Post and Courier reports that attorneys for a pair of South Carolina Republicans argued in state court that they have been caused irreparable harm by the state Republican Party's decision to forego a presidential primary next year. The party countered, they control the process and voters can participate in other ways. Circuit Court Judge Jocelyn Newman heard more than 2 hours of arguments in a lawsuit challenging the state GOP executive committee's near unanimous decision to forego a 2020 Republican presidential primary. She said she will issue a ruling in the coming weeks. Stay tuned, guys. We'll keep you updated on that one. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week, we give you a headline, a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline, a Florida man called the sheriff's office to report stolen marijuana. The deputy's response, stop calling. Not even narcs like narcs. And just like a thirsty, thirsty copperhead waiting in the woods to bite ya, we buried the lead. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren continues to solidify her second-place status in the Democratic field, according to South Carolina polls and in other places like Iowa and New Hampshire, where she's surpassing former Vice President Joe Biden, though typically within the margin of error for the poll. But South Carolina remains Joe Biden country. His ties to the state over the years and high name recognition from his 8 years as Barack Obama's vice president have helped Biden maintain a commanding presence in South Carolina polls of 20-plus points. Now, despite Biden's grip on the Palmetto State, candidates continue to work chipping away at his lead. And Mayon Schechter and Emma Dumais with the state newspaper recently took a look at Warren's political landscape in South Carolina. And we have Mayon in studio to recap their story with us. Welcome back,
Mayon. Thank you for having me. I love to be here.
I'm glad you're here. We're 18 weeks away from the South Carolina primary. Mayan, who's going to win? I'm just kidding.
Well.
That's what everyone asks me. And I'm sure you've been to a lot of weddings and people are asking you the same thing.
Yes,
and
that's you're like, exactly what happened this weekend, actually.
It's like, well, we're 18 weeks away and someone has already had a heart attack. So there's a lot of things happening here.
Right.
But you guys focused on Elizabeth Warren in your piece. Tell me kind of what prompted you to write that story and then just what you guys found in that story on Elizabeth Warren.
Sure. So both Emma and I have been talking for a while about writing a more comprehensive piece about Elizabeth Warren and who exactly was her coalition on the ground. We started to see, though, that she was spiking in the polls nationally, and so we became more aggressive about reporting on it. So our first question that we wanted to answer was, who is her coalition on the ground, and what exactly is she doing here? Like, what is the campaign doing on the ground in South Carolina to help boost up those polling numbers that we're seeing, not just in Iowa and New Hampshire nationally, but even in South Carolina, too? And so we took a couple of weeks talking to Elizabeth Warren backers, why they decided to choose her over someone like Joe Biden, who has high name ID and a strong relationship with the state, or other candidates that have come through as well. We talked to Democratic strategists who had a good perspective on what exactly she's doing on the ground. But then we also obviously reached out to her campaign to figure out what are they doing behind the scenes mm-hmm. that we're not seeing, maybe.
And what were people telling you on the ground that they were liking about her, or maybe what they were attributing to her momentum, her boost in momentum in polls? What were they telling you in terms of how this was all playing out?
Well, Warren supporters really enjoy her enthusiasm and her energy on the campaign trail. And the supporters that she has here are very excited to mm-hmm. support her. I mean, they love the fact that she has so many plans. They love that energy. They love that when she comes here, she'll stand in line for hours just to take a photo with every single person that stands in line. So they're very excited. But there is another block of voters who still have concerns about her abilities to win November. Yes, they are supportive of her, but they still voice some concerns. They're worried that, can she take out on Trump on a debate stage? Can she bring over undecided voters, or bring over maybe even those moderate Republicans or independents that we keep hearing about so much? Or are people who back Biden, are they willing to switch over and back Warren? So there are still concerns among her supporters, but for the most part, we found people are generally very excited about who she is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kind of going along with that electability vein you're talking about, it is a top priority for voters in 2020. A recent South Carolina poll by CBS News and YouGov showed that 51 of respondents see Warren as being able to defeat Trump. But for Biden, that number jumped to 70%, and those numbers were similar in Iowa as well. So it's a lot of that. And you're talking about how people feel on the ground as well. But I'm guessing then there's also a pretty healthy dose of reality in your article, too, about, you know, just how much it is kind of an uphill battle, especially in South Carolina, with Biden being the front runner. And you also have a very interesting sentence in your story that many of Warren's supporters say they aren't worried about her polling with black voters in South Carolina, largely because they reject the premise her campaign has a problem with this constituency to begin with. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people could say that, but a lot of people are pretty honest and open about their issues with trying to work with or cater to and appeal to that electorate, which is such a big part of the Democratic primary electorate here in South Carolina.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's a storyline that her campaign likes. I don't think it's a storyline that her hardcore supporters like. But I mean, it's the reality on the ground. She came to Charleston not too long ago, and she toured a predominantly African-American neighborhood in the Charleston area, Rosemont. And this is a neighborhood that has been subject to traffic issues with the nearby interstate, industrial issues, climate issues, et cetera. And she walked around the neighborhood. She sat down with people who live in the neighborhood. She even at one point went up to a woman who came out of her house, and they chatted on the porch for a little bit about their families and talked a little bit about the area. And there were people there on the ground who really appreciated her coming out, who felt that she was very personable. They really thought that they could get to know her. But after she spoke, I walked out and started chatting with some neighbors who hadn't known that maybe she was coming through, or hadn't really participated and listened to her speak. And they expressed doubts about her ability to win.
Her ability to win and her just ability to appeal to the to those moderates, I'm guessing, which make up such a big part of,
yeah,
you know, the black voters, especially, you know, those older black moderate voters who are going towards Joe Biden, trying to peel those people off is probably, I mean, again, another big factor for her.
It's tough. I mean, Joe Biden, like we've said, has a very strong relationship with the state, with black voters. He hasn't only been to the state many, many times, but obviously he was the first black president's vice president. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal for voters. Certainly, her appeal on the ground is strong, but again, there is a pretty healthy voting bloc here that worries about her ability to sort of cross over after the primary if she is the eventual nominee, and able to bring in voters who have those concerns about her.
Yeah, and especially when we talk about demographics, you know, just to kind of back all this up too, and look at this Fox News poll from a couple weeks ago that again showed Biden with 41%, Warren at 12% here. And when you look at these demographics, again, Joe Biden gets everyone. He gets like old, young, black, white, and then just kind of for comparison, you know, Biden has about, in this one poll, it's like about 50% of these respondents are African American are supporting him, and then when you go to the next highest person, it's Elizabeth Warren with 8%. I mean, that just kind of just shows this chasm that people, what it looks like when you're looking at trying to appeal to that key demographic in South Carolina. And, you know, it makes you wonder a little bit about her approach to South Carolina. I did ask her about it, and she says they are paying more attention, they are visiting more. But, you know, she was up in Rock Hill a couple weeks ago, and that was her first time in South Carolina since like 40 plus days. Like, she just didn't come for several weeks. Right. So it's interesting to see that kind of, you could say, hands-off approach in some sense, even though there's such demand for her to be there. And there was obviously a large crowd there. So it's almost like, I wonder if she's kind of putting it into second place in a sense, because, you know, it is, you do get proportional delegates here. So if you get second place, you do get some delegates. But I'm just wondering if it's just kind of autopilot at this point. We've only seen her go to big cities in South Carolina, whereas other candidates are going to these smaller spots where they haven't seen these candidates in a while and they want to see them. They want to be, you know, politic. They want to do these real deal politic. And I'm just wondering if you got the vibe that they are kind of just saying, hey, we're going to do what we need to do to maintain a presence here, but, you know, we're not going to like double everything up like Kamala Harris is doing, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Figuring out her campaign structure in South Carolina and what they're doing was kind of difficult, actually. They don't advertise a lot about what they're doing behind the scenes. I mean, we were able to get the number of staffers that they have on the ground. They've clearly opened up many, many offices here. But when it comes to actually generating excitement, I mean, you mentioned the Rock Hill visit, and those were optics that stuck out, right? She went to an HBCU in Rock Hill on a Saturday, and yes, there were black voters in the crowd, but she drove out a primarily white audience. Mm-hmm. And you can have the biggest rallies, you can have the most staff on the ground and the most offices, et cetera, but if you're not driving out and exciting the base that you really need to win the primary, there needs to be some kind of conversation clearly about that.
And that's something that we've seen people, you know, kind of saying in comparison, these political watchers in South Carolina kind of comparing her campaign right now to Bernie Sanders in 2016. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're getting the big crowds, but it's at the same time predominantly white. And it's, you know, that's not only her problem in South Carolina, too.
No. Even,
I mean, you know, it's a broad spectrum of people. You get all these different rallies. And, you know, obviously we can't base everything off of a crowd demographics, but they are indicative of maybe where that support is. And another way we can indicate support is looking at fundraising dollars. Mm-hmm. And we did just see Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier, a friend of the pod, had a pretty interesting article this weekend looking at donors in South Carolina, who they've been giving to, and they can determine where these voters come from, who gave more than $200, these high ticket donors in some respects, where they're located. And for the South Carolina contingent, we did see the most people were donating to Joe Biden, and he got about $185,000 in donations, which was about five times as much as Elizabeth Warren. So I think that's maybe a little bit more indication. Again, it's like, okay, we have poll numbers, but let's look at these fundraising dollars coming from South Carolina and kind of have a little bit of a mix there. So I'm wondering if that's even more of an indication about where we are in the polls and just the flexibility of these polls at this point, too, because there are a lot of undecideds and there are people that are not entirely all in on people at the same time, too.
Sure. I mean, I think a number of factors are important to sort of summarizing the makeup of her campaign and her outreach in the state. I will say this, though. When you talk to her supporters, when you talk to people who are excited about her candidacy, they really feel like, and this was Emma Dumaine interviewed her pastor, who's going to be coming down to South Carolina more often about this. But when she has those one-on-one moments with voters, for a lot of voters, that's been the turning point mm-hmm. for them. It's not necessarily been the rallies. It's not been the layout of the just sheer number of plans that she has, but it's been that one-on-one moment, whether it's been getting a call from her congratulating you on your law school graduation, or standing in line and getting a photo with her and she makes a comment about your t-shirt and that says like, pray more, worry less. And then mm-hmm. she says, hey, pray for me. And you respond, okay. I mean, that was what one voter told us. So it's those little moments mm-hmm. that her supporters truly believe could bring more support to her. But that also means that she has to visit the state more.
Yeah. And that's, I'm guess, I was going to ask you what maybe she needs to do or what were people telling you that she needs to do. And I think that's one of those things, too, because people want to see her. And I think that's another good tactic. Again, changing from Bernie 2016, where he didn't do the selfie lines and things like that. She's spending hours getting selfies with people. And one selfie, I mean, who knows how far one selfie travels. But if you're anything like me, when I take a selfie, I mean, it goes, I charge for selfies these
right.
days. I charge myself for selfies. We book it.
Why not?
But I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, you put that on Facebook, you put that on Instagram, people are going to be like, oh, you saw Elizabeth Warren, and then you might have that opportunity to engage with them. So it's a real grassroots movement there in a sense that that's what she's capitalizing on. Mm-hmm. I think that's another way that she's getting some movement. But to kind of wrap up, we've been chatting for a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about the debate we saw last week. And we did see her on the defensive on the debate stage. I saw this one headline from The Economist that has a story that said, Democratic candidates get the knives out for Elizabeth Warren. And one of the big things that we did see was Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who pounced on her for not giving a direct answer on tax increases for Medicare for All. So I'm just wondering, you know, how much we're going to see that kind of play out more and more in South Carolina with people not necessarily attacking Joe Biden because he's a moderate and these guys, you know, Klobuchar and Buttigieg were moderates too. But mm-hmm. if we're going to start seeing maybe that message change with these, you know, these moderates going after people like Warren and people like Bernie Sanders, because I have heard from voters on the ground who say, yes, I like Elizabeth Warren, but please don't go too far left,
right.
you know, and that might hurt them in places like South Carolina, which, again, is kind of like a precursor for Super Tuesday at the mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think as she continues to do well in the polls, she's obviously going to be jabbed by her opponents more and more. It's interesting how that will play out in South Carolina. I think maybe we'll get a little bit of a taste of that this coming weekend, since so many, including Warren, Buttigieg, and Biden, are coming in for that criminal justice forum at Benedict College. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern from a lot of voters. I mean, this is a pretty moderate-ish state, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a red state, but a pretty moderate-ish
Democratic
state,
Party.
Even,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And there is definitely a worry, particularly on the issue of healthcare, that if she sways a little too much to the left, maybe, you know, in that sort of Bernie Sanders camp way of thinking, that she'll lose some support. Mm-hmm. But I guess it remains to be seen mm-hmm. how that plays out here.
I'm guessing that's something we'll see those campaigns really jump on her for here in South Carolina going forward. So, all right, you can read Mayan Schechter's piece with Emma Dumaine in the state newspaper. And also a fond farewell to Emma Dumaine for McClatchy in D.C. She will no longer be covering, she's no longer the regional reporter for y'all. She'll be covering more national stuff. So,
do you have some of that like farewell kind of music, like closing time? No,
like,
yeah,
we're
very excited for Emma. I'm super stoked for her. She's going to be covering congressional leadership, mm-hmm. which, thank God, there are just so many South Carolinians in leadership. So she's not going away. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll still have Emma Dumaine bylines in our paper and online. But I'm super excited for her. I'm sad that I'm losing my small partner in crime, mm-hmm. even though she was up in D.C. and I'm here. But I'm very excited for her. So
yeah, I got to work with Emma too at the Post and Courier.
Right.
How great she is. And we never had her on the podcast, but I'm sure there's still time. Again, like you're saying, like she's covering leadership. She knows South Carolina. We'll catch up with you soon, Emma. Thanks, Mayan.
Thank you.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Leading off, Senator Lindsey Graham told Jonathan Swan on Axios on HBO that he would support impeachment if you, quote, show me something that is a crime. If you could show me that, you know, Trump actually was engaging in a quid pro quo outside the phone call, that would be very disturbing, quote. Sticking with Senator Graham, he raised a record-setting $3.29 million in the third quarter. That's the most raised in a single quarter by any candidate in South Carolina's history, according to his campaign, per the Associated Press. Now, Jamie Harrison, a Democrat running for Graham's seat, raised more than $2.2 million in the third quarter. Last week, the U.S. House voted 354-60 to condemn President Donald Trump's decision to abruptly remove troops from Syria that would expose Kurdish allies to Turkish-led attacks. The measure was backed by all Democrats and two-thirds of Republicans, including Representative Joe Wilson and Representative William Timmons. Republicans Jeff Duncan, Ralph Norman, and Tom Rice voted against the measure. This weekend, several candidates will participate in a criminal justice forum at Benedict College here in Columbia, including President Donald Trump, who will speak Friday. Democrats, including former Vice President Joe Biden, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Senator Bernie Sanders, and others will speak individually over the weekend. Tickets for the 2020 Bipartisan Justice Center Forum are available online at 2020club.org. And just a little poll bite, not a snake bite. According to a recent CBS News YouGov poll, only 18% of South Carolina Democratic voters follow the presidential campaign via Twitter. What? People aren't on that hellscape? The top medium TV news came in at 77%. And though it's not included in the poll, I assume the lead is about 100%. People follow it all here. I mean, that's just unfair to publish those results. And speaking of, check out this week's Trail Bites episode because we have an exclusive interview with California Senator Kamala Harris. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And did you know that Russ McKinney with South Carolina Public Radio is back with some more great state trivia?
Back again.
He's here. Russ.
Glad to be here.
Are you worried about the snakes? Snake bites? Do you venture outside and where the snakes live?
I do, but I'm on constant guard for snakes.
Oh, see, this is the advice people need to hear. His head is on a swivel, people. Russ, what trivia do you have for us today?
Okay, a lot of talk this time of year, every year, about the Gamecocks.
Ah,
yeah,
the football team.
Mascot of the University of South Carolina athletic teams. As far as I'm aware, there are just a few teams in the country that use Gamecocks as their mascot, moniker, et cetera.
Hmm.
USC, obviously. Jacksonville State University is another. And Sumter High School. With Gamecocks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sumter and USC are Gamecocks for the same reason, and that is a tribute, of course, to the fighting Gamecock, General Thomas Sumter, Revolutionary War hero in South Carolina, who was a diminutive but combative and somewhat ornery character, we're told.
I love that word.
But anyway, of course, now the most well-known, I guess, name for a South Carolina Revolutionary War leader would be the Swamp Fox, Francis Marion. But our question this week is, which Revolutionary War leader in South Carolina went by the name the Wizard Owl?
Wow. And we know there's no Harry Potter.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
No Harry Potter. The Wizard Owl. Well-known Revolutionary War hero in South Carolina. A, General William Moultrie. B, General Andrew Pickens. C, General Daniel Morgan. D, Sergeant William Jasper, known as the Wizard Owl from their exploits in and around the Revolutionary War in South Carolina.
E, Micah Caskey.
I thought about that.
Can you give us those again, Russ, really quick?
Okay, William Moultrie, obviously Fort Moultrie, Battle of Sullivan's Island, later went on to be governor. General Andrew Pickens, again, hero from a number of battles, went on to serve in the state legislature after the war. General Daniel Morgan of Kings Mountain and Cowpens battle fame, and Sergeant William Jasper, who held the Moultrie flag at Fort Moultrie on Sullivan's Island during that battle and became a hero.
And you said C was who again?
General Daniel Morgan.
I go with Daniel Morgan just because you're talking Kings Mountain. Owls, mountains. And I also kind of want to go with A, but I'm a little partial, but I'm going to go against my judgment to go with C.
Well, the answer is B, General Andrew Pickens, was known as the Wizard Owl, given to him by some native tribes. He was from the western part of the state, the Abbeville, Anderson, kind of old Pendleton district was kind of his stomping grounds. Following the war, he did a lot of negotiating with a number of Indian treaties, so he had a lot of interaction with the Indians, and they labeled him the Wizard Owl. General Andrew Pickens. His son, Andrew Jr., was later elected governor of South Carolina. His grandson, Francis Pickens, was also elected governor.
Wizard Owl.
And he's buried in the old stone churchyard in Pickens County. That's one of the most historic cemeteries in South Carolina. Now, before the emails and DMs and texts start coming in, we must say that General Daniel Morgan actually is from Virginia. But he was very active in fighting in South Carolina. And the downtown square in Spartanburg is named Morgan Square in his honor.
Fascinating, Russ.
As usual.
Thanks, Russ, as usual.
Okay.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on scetv.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's Super Easy to Use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org, as well as scetv.org/sclead. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Follow us on Instagram at @scleadpod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle at @scleadpod. We have swag, sticker swag, that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send some stickers your way. Just like we did to Seth O'Haron, who put one on his Pepsi delivery truck. We're doing the do, Seth. Thank you, my friend. Check out our Instagram account to see that sweet, sweet sticker. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the state newspaper. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on October 21st, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message. Oh my God! Oh! Oh! Oh my God! Snakes! There are snakes in the studio. Hit the alarm, AT! Hit the snake alart!
Snake alert.
Oh, but
snake alert.
We gotta fight back!
I repeat.
They're coming!
Snake alert.
Get the whip!
Snake
Get
alert.
The whip!
Snake alert.
No! Snakes on a plane! We should have known this was gonna happen!
Snake alert.
Oh, they're so slippery!
Snake alert.
They're so thirsty.
Snake alert.
Oh, subscribe
snake
to
alert.
The podcast!
Snake alert. I repeat, snake alert.